It's time to present Scott DuPont to bring you another episode of Finance Your Movie with tips and strategies to help you get your money to tell your story. It's time!
Okay, we're back with another episode of Finance Your Movie. If the background looks a little bit different, I lost my internet, but this was too important of a show to miss. So I am here with the Jason Horton, writer, director, editor. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention you are a producer because you have 77 movies under your belt. Wow.
Wow. That many. I didn't know. I usually say over 70, but yeah, I haven't looked in a while.
It's pretty incredible. So really an honor to have you here. I know how busy you are, Jason, but one of the things that really resonated me before the show is I saw this YouTube clip of you saying that the title is Don't Let Other Filmmakers' Failures Stop You. Mm-hmm. And in about 30 seconds, you really summarize these really successful producers. I don't know whether they're jealous of independent lower budget filmmakers like you and I, but they just tell you, oh, you can't do that on that budget, or you're gonna fail, or don't even try.
Right.
Tell me when you first got those naysayers.
Sure. Well, you know, and first off, I want to say I don't think it's necessarily jealousy. I think, you know, that might be a component. But I think a problem in independent film in general is people get used to doing things a certain way, whether it's a super low budget or whether it's a big budget or, you know, whatever it is. And they think that that is it. Like, that's the way to do it. Like, so as somebody who's, you know, just operated like in the studio level, you know, they're just not going to see how this other thing is even possible, you know? So like, I don't think it's necessarily a negative thing, but I used to get it a lot when I was starting out. You know, I did my first movie out of college. I made it for, you know, $4,000 on credit cards, you know, shot a little mini DV camera.
A feature? And we
got, yeah, a feature. And we got a distribution through York Entertainment, which, you know, is a pretty notoriously bad distributor back in the day. I don't think they're around anymore. Actually, I know they're not. And, you know, so I had a movie out and then I moved to California. And, you know, I was trying to get work and, you know, I was having trouble getting jobs. And, you know, I would tell people about this little movie I made and they'd be like, you can't make it. And they just dismiss it, you know, like it's nothing. It doesn't count, you know. And even as I started, you know, doing other movies, you know, making them for $25,000 or $50,000, I would hear the same thing often because like I was working on, like I worked for Fox for a long time doing promo editing. And I would hear from, you know, I'd talk with people on lunch, you know, or I would talk with my boss who, you know, was like this Emmy winning producer, and their eyes would just glaze over when you would talk about that stuff. Like it just didn't register to them, you know? And also, you know, if you're in there working for someone, you know, in a task, like a, you know, an assistant editor or, you know, a grip or a gaffer or a camera assistant, that's kind of what people look at you as, you know, and they don't necessarily like, you know, see you as someone who produces movies. They just think, yeah, good job, kid. You know, but they don't really take it seriously. You know,
I think you're right because I've worked in the studio world a little bit, doing a little bit of acting and some background work. And it's a totally different mentality when you're on a soundstage at Fox with 100-person crew. You've got Teamsters, IATSE, DGA, PGA. I mean, it's just
totally
everything functions. It's a different level.
Yeah. I was going to say one last thing. You know, even up until maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and at this point, you know, I had directed, you know, probably, you know, 12 or 15 films. I'd made a lot of movies and I was having meetings with people to, you know, finance actually Craving, which at the time I was looking for $500,000 for. And, you know, I had more than one person, you know, like kind of, you know, look at the other movies and the budget levels and be like, you know, like you wouldn't even know what a real set is like. you know, so, you know, I had trouble, you know, moving past that, which is another, you know, kind of double-edged sword in working in independent film. You get enough of those credits and it is hard to break out of that. You know, like I'm happy with it now, but, you know, there was a time where I was really trying to, you know, move up into the $1 million, $2 million budgets. And it's hard to make that jump once you have a certain number of credits under your belt.
Yeah, I think anything $1.5 million, $2 million right now is crazy today, because in my opinion, there is no theatrical for an independent film. Not that they're going to show up for Top Gun Maverick, you know, right. Avatar, that sort of thing. But anyway, going back to your, let's say your earlier films, say a $50,000 budget or so.
Yeah.
How did you first put those projects together? How'd you get the money? How'd you find people that were, you know, gonna back you?
Yeah. Well, you know, so initially I'd made the one movie and I was, you know, having trouble getting another one going. And I just started working mostly as an editor, sometimes as a camera operator. I was doing a comedy documentary and one of the producers was wanting to move into narrative features, low budget narrative features. And we were just talking one day and, you know, we hit it off. He really liked me. And he you know, he told him I was a writer and, you know, director. He's like, oh, do you have any zombie scripts? And, you know, I didn't, but I was like, you know, I could write one in a couple of weeks. And about 3 weeks later, we're pulling the trigger on Edges of Darkness, which was my second movie. And he produced it. It was about, I think the budget was around $25,000.
And he put up the money?
He put up, yeah, right up front, equity financing. And that's pretty much all my personal projects. That's pretty much how they've went. I've either financed them myself or, you know, I've got equity financing, usually from someone that I worked with before. Or, you know, like, for example, Monsters in the Woods, we made that for about, I think, $30,000. And one of the chief producers on that, it has been a friend for, you know, 10 years prior to that. He's a producer. I met him in New Orleans when I made my first movie. And we always talked about doing something and we just never found anything to work together. And when I finished that Monsters in the Woods script, you know, 10 years later, that was the one he responded to. And, you know, he put up some money and raised some more. You know, and that's pretty much how I've done my, you know, personally produced projects. Now, after I did Edges of Darkness, it was fairly successful. It was in, you know, Blockbusters. It was like lining the shelves, like 12 copies. It was in all the
that's
Hollywood
pretty
videos.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's huge.
In its first quarter, that movie made over 100K. You know, like it was doing well.
Back up. Okay. What was the budget on that movie? And say again how much it made back the first quarter.
It was $25,000 and it made $100,000. Now, to be fair, the producers saw very little of that $100,000. It wasn't the best distribution deal, you know, which I could get into later.
Yeah, but, we don't need to go down that rabbit hole. Yeah. But you did see some money out of that, right?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a great return, though.
But right after that, I started getting hired to do, because other people are looking at this movie and my first movie, and I had just finished a third one that was even lower budget. I think I made that for $5,000. And like, they were like, hey, we want you to do this for us, but for a little bit more money. So I was hired by a couple of producers out of New Orleans, you know, who were making movies in LA, and I directed a string of movies for them. And the first one, I think it was around, and I'm guessing because I never actually was privy to the numbers, but I think it was around 30,000. And then like the biggest one I did for them was probably 60, 65. And I directed probably 10 movies for those guys. So like, that was like my, like 2010 to like 2014, like I was pretty much directing movies for them and a few other people who were trying to repeat their business model.
And each one, they would put up the money, you would get a writer director fee, and then just go off and make the money, right?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. And on those movies, and that's actually what inspired me to kind of go off on my own, because, you know, I did, like I said, about 10 movies for these guys. And, you know, they're not like, you know, like big $1 million hits. But, you know, if you look at collectively the money that those movies were earning, you know, we're talking in the millions. And I had no back end stake on them whatsoever. I got paid a nominal fee up front, and which you can imagine what it is if you're making a $50,000 movie. It's not much.
Yeah.
And so, you know, here I was, you know, say 2015, I'd done all these movies and I was pretty much flat busted broke. you know, no passive income. And, you know, and I'm seeing, you know, all these movies that are making passive income for other producers. And I'm like, man, I got to do this for myself. So, you know, that's kind of what I started doing.
Wow. So leading up to Craving, which I just saw a few weeks ago, and we're not going to dive too deep on how that film came together for financing, because you can catch all of that on 2 weeks ago. Kevin Caliber dives really deep into that. But leading up to how that got financed, how did you and Kevin connect to ultimately create Craving?
We met through Robert Bravo. About in 2017, I directed a movie called Death Day. At that time, it was called The Campus. The distributor changed it to Death Day. And we needed someone to play the monster. And Bravo had just done some pretty intensive makeup effects work on Kevin. And he was like, Kevin's a really good guy. He's a great actor. Let's like have him come in. And Kevin, I think, relished the opportunity to do something where he was a little, you know, it wasn't like about his looks. It was about, you know, like performance and, you know, the monster stuff. So that was it. We worked on Death Day and we just kind of hit it off. You know, we were friends for, you know, several years after that. I ended up coming on to help them raise money for 16 Bits, which a movie he starred in and produced. And I was just always in the back of my mind. And Kevin's one of those guys that if he's on set, doesn't matter the position. Like if something needs done, he does it. If a ditch needs dug, he does it. If, you know, whatever. Sweep the floor.
Yeah, even when he's number one or two on the call sheet.
On the call sheet, absolutely.
He will do that. One of the most incredible guys I've ever worked with and met.
100%. And no real ego when it comes to it. He's all about, like, you know, the work, and he sees the value in, you know, like in the work and what the work can do for you. And he's willing to sacrifice for that. You know, he's a great guy to work with.
Yeah. So you said something earlier about these relationships. People would see your work, you'd have a relationship, you'd circle back maybe, and maybe the timing was right. How important do you think that is when you're reaching out to people to, you know, get a $5,000 or $10,000 equity check to put together one of these projects?
I personally think it's very important. You know, I had a mentor. So we had after Death Day, me and a production partner, we got this angel investor that was putting money into our production company to make animation, you know, and he put in a lot of money over the course of those 3 years. And, you know, he would tell me, because he invested in startups all the time. And he was like, 9 times out of 10, like investors, they're investing in the people, not necessarily the product, not necessarily the thing. It's about the people. And I've found that to be true. Like I honestly don't think any project that I've ever got financed in equity was really about the project. It was more like the people liked me. They trusted me to deliver, and I could have made anything and they wouldn't have cared. You know what I mean? So I think for the most part, investors invest in people. At least when it comes to films.
Yeah. 77 movies later.
Yeah, exactly.
The proof is in the pudding.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. So, and, you know, and speaking of Craving, you know, we did the crowdfunder and, you know, we raised whatever, $65,000, and a good sized chunk of that came in directly through the work I do through my YouTube channel, you know, helping other people, you know? So again, they were investing in me, not so much Craving, you know?
Yeah. I love your YouTube channel, by the way. Where can any filmmakers listening to this podcast right now find you on your YouTube channel?
At my YouTube, it's just youtube.com/ J Horton or the J Horton. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it's the J Horton.
If you just type in the J Horton on the search tab in YouTube, it'll come up.
Yeah, the J Horton. So one thing I wanted to comment about Craving, And I'll just be really upfront and honest. Horror is not really my most popular genre.
Yeah.
I do like it, but I'm not one of these people that, like, it's like my number one thing and I'm craving blood and stuff. But
totally.
I was so impressed. In fact, it brought me back to a time when I was a little kid. I had forgotten about this. I used to love, I think it was called Jeepers Creepers or Thriller Chiller, like Friday nights or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at midnight, and the theater was packed. I was lucky enough to be situated in front of a row of teenage girls, and the screaming and the excitement, the energy when Craving played was just through the roof. And I really enjoyed the movie and the whole atmosphere. So two shade of that. Two things I got to compliment you on. Bravo with the practical effects of the monster was the best of the best. Like,
yeah,
I would have seen that in a $10 million film, which I know you didn't spend $10 million.
Not quite.
And the other thing that blew me away, and I don't know how you even afforded these people, was the visual effects. Because when I looked at Al Gomez and Holly Rockwell, I actually went up to Holly after the movie and I told her, I said, I don't know how Jay cast a teenage girl that looks so much like you. And she goes, no, that was all visual effects. And then I walked up to you later and you talked about the visual effects.
Totally.
For the flashback. Totally. I mean, wow.
Yeah. Technology has just come so far. You know, our visual effects guy, and you know, he's just a guy like me, you know, working freelance, you know, doing jobs. And you know, he saw a YouTube video, I don't know, a couple of years ago when I think it was Mandalorian came out with the Luke Skywalker flashback. And, you know, there was some chatter online about how it didn't look great. And like less than 12 hours after that was out, somebody on YouTube had, you know, taken a program and de-aged him and fixed it. And it looked better than the Disney thing. Wow. And, you know, he saw that. And by the way, our visual effects guy, his name is Brooke Hubbs. And
Brooke Hubbs.
Yeah. And he saw that. He's like, I mean, if somebody did that in 12 hours, I could do that. So, you know, he looked into it, figured out the program, figured out how to do it. And he did it. And I when he first told me about it, I honestly didn't believe him. He was saying, I think I can do this. And I was like, yeah, sure. Give it a, he's like, just let me try. And we'll go from there. And I was like, yeah, sure. Try. It doesn't hurt nothing to try. And he sent me back that first shot of Holly, that little push in. And that is pretty much, you know, we got a higher res version of it, but it's pretty much the exact shot that's in the movie. And I was blown away. And you don't
incredible.
Now a year from now you're going to see this stuff in a lot of smaller independent films, but at least for right now it really I think sets Craving apart, because you don't see that in, you know, sub $100,000 movies that looks anywhere close to that good.
I've never seen that. I was totally blown away, so congratulations on that. Where can people go see Craving right now? Because I really encourage you people, especially if you're a horror film, you will love this film.
Yeah, I mean, right now, the easiest way is on Amazon. You know, it's on Amazon. It's also for rental on YouTube and Google Play. It'll be hitting like Vudu and Apple TV and all that very soon. And then eventually it'll widen out onto the AVOD platforms like Tubi TV and stuff like that. But right now, Amazon.
Excellent. And where's the best way that people can follow you?
So I'm pretty active on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can always find me at DJ Horton. I think on Facebook it might be Jason Horton because they wouldn't let me do the J. But pretty much at DJ Horton anywhere.
Awesome. Well, Jason, thank you so much. I know you're super, super busy doing this today. You really are an inspiration to so many. You're an inspiration to me, but so many filmmakers out there. I encourage you to do the follow the YouTube channel. Any parting words of advice for someone getting ready to do their first film and they're raising a small amount, $50,000, $100,000 for their first film, or maybe less?
I just did an interview with a distributor and he said this, and I think it's really true. I think if you're going to be in it for the long run, you have to have realistic expectations, you know, and if you make a 50 grand movie, if you make a 250 grand movie, you got to understand that a good chunk of independent films don't make their money back. Like, it is a tough business, and it doesn't always have to do with how good or bad your movie is. You might have an excellent movie and it just doesn't hit, you know, like this guy runs a distribution company, and they have, so he said, we had two movies, they're both like comparable quality, comparable genres, comparable name stars in them, comparable marketing programs. One of them made like 500 grand in its first 6 months, one of them made $500, you know.
Wow.
And they're, you know what I mean? And there's no objective difference. I know that's a hard pill to swallow for filmmakers, because everybody needs to believe that if you just put your nose to the grindstone and you work really hard and you do your best and you do everything right, it's going to work out. And it doesn't always. So like, and I don't say that to discourage people, you know, but you know, you just, for me, my success or my modicum of success has come because I never gave up. I just kept making movies. And, you know, like I said, I've produced over 70 now. And, you know, there's, you know, probably a third of those that it, like, never made a dime, you know, of like $5-6. And a lot of them came early on. And, you know, if I had just given, I mean, I didn't see much money out of my first probably 4 movies. Like eventually I did, but you know, in those first, like say 5-6 years, I mean, hardly anything at all. And a lot of people would have give up. I see it all the time.
Yeah.
Filmmakers go in and they put like $100,000, they save up a bunch of movie. Maybe they mortgage their house or they, you know, borrow from their parents or friends or family, and they overextend themselves and they kill themselves to make this movie thinking it's going to make a bunch of money or lead to another bigger thing. And it doesn't always, have to do with the quality of the movie. So just,
yeah,
I think realistic expectations. If you're going to get in to filmmaking, you better damn sure love it. And my honest advice is, if there is anything else in life that you can do and enjoy, like do that, you know,
a lot of easier ways is to make money for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
one last thing, and making movies has become, like, you know, cheaper and cheaper and easier and easier. Like, there is a class of filmmaker out there right now that has day jobs. They make one or two movies a year with, you know, for $10,000 or $5,000, you know, kind of like a hobby. Like, it's a little more than a hobby because they're, mm-hmm. you know, they are making money on them. But, you know, like, they're not putting all their eggs in that basket, you know?
Yeah.
You don't have to put all your eggs in the basket unless that's just what you have to do.
That story you just shared about two comparable films, one made $500, one made $500,000. Obviously, there's no guarantees.
Right.
Is there anything that the distributor told you or your advice that can put the odds in your favor, like marketing, social media?
Oh, totally. I mean, there's a ton of things you can do to increase the odds.
Of the things you would recommend to filmmakers just to increase the odds?
Yeah, I mean, you know, thinking about your genre when you start, you know, like, are you in a bar? And I'm not saying to just chase marketable genres, you know, it also needs to be genuine, you need to love it. But, you know, like, what is the audience for that? Actually, you know what, let's not even say pick a genre. Let's say whatever genre you decide to work in, like, start thinking about how you're going to reach that audience. Where do people that watch those types of movies, where do they congregate? How are you going to reach them? How is this movie going to appeal to them? How is it going to stand out in a flooded marketplace? Because it is a flooded marketplace right now. You know, I'd say start putting on your marketing hat even at the very beginning. Like, I am prepping for a movie that I'm fundraising for now. And I Zoom record every meeting. Everything. So like, when I start promotion on this movie, I got little like Zoom clips talking to the actors. I got Zoom clips talking to the DP. I got Zoom clips talking to potential investors if they so allow it. You know what I mean? And like, always thinking about, you know, having material to promote your movie.
Awesome. In case anyone from our Millionaire Flicks audience is watching this right now, what is the next film you're prepping and raising money for?
So the next one I'm doing is called A Hard Place. It's a much bigger movie than Craving, at least triple the budget. It's a monster versus monster movie about a group of criminals that are on the lam, and they end up in the middle of this feud between the monsters that rule the day and the creatures that rule the night. It takes place in like the Ozarks. It'll be up in the mountains, and it's kind of a Hatfield McCoy monster versus monster movie. Yeah,
cool.
But
Hard Place.
Yeah.
Hard Place. Okay. So there you have it. If anyone's listening from our Millionaire Flicks audience, follow the Jay Horton on social media and ask about Hard Place, and you might just be able to be a participant or be some sort of producer.
Yeah.
Jay Horton, thank you so much. I wish you all the best on Craving and your new upcoming project, Hard Place.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And remember, it's time!
There's never been a better time to make your own indie film
And if you have a dream project you're excited about and 100% committed to getting it funded, go to financeyourmovie.com and click on the green telephone button. You'll see our calendar, and if you find an open spot, grab it. You'll get a one-on-one call with me or one of my partners. It will be the best hour you've ever spent getting clarity and strategy towards financing your movie. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.